And we began with Mass for Double Choir. Stay tuned for the 8 o'clock buzz with Jan Miyasaki. It's coming up next. I'll be back next week. Until then, I hope your week is full of great music. You're tuned to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison, listener-sponsored community radio.
The WORT Board of Directors will hold its regularly scheduled meeting on Wednesday, March 19th at 6 p.m. in person at the station at 118 South Bedford Street. The public is welcome to attend. This meeting is also available virtually via Zoom. For information on how to attend this meeting virtually, please email president@wortfm.org. WORT thanks its listener sponsors and TNW Ensemble Theater, presenting Scammed, a new comedy running March 13th through March 23rd at TNW Ensemble Theater, 1957 Winnebago Street. When a freelancing editor falls for a classic scam, she assumes the amoral alter ego of Helen Wheels to get even. Tickets are available at the door with cash or check, or online through Ticket Tailor. More information is available by calling 608-770-0826.
BBC News, I'm John Shea. Turkish police have detained the popular mayor of Istanbul, Ekrem İmamoğlu, days before he was due to be selected as an opposition presidential candidate. Mr. İmamoğlu, who's seen as one of President Erdogan's strongest political rivals, has been accused of corruption and aiding a terrorist group. Hilkan Baran reports.
Istanbul Mayor Ekrem İmamoğlu was detained in the early hours of the morning. About 100 others have also been detained, including local officials and business figures. They face charges of corruption, bribery, rigging tenders, and aiding terrorist groups. Mr. İmamoğlu was due to be elected as the presidential candidate for the main opposition Republican People's Party on Sunday. His party says the appointment will go ahead despite his detention. On Tuesday, the Istanbul University annulled Mr. İmamoğlu's diploma, a move seen by many as an attempt to prevent the city's mayor from running against President Recep Tayyip Erdogan in future elections.
Ukraine's president Volodymyr Zelensky has accused Vladimir Putin of breaking a promise to stop attacks temporarily on Ukrainian energy facilities. The assurance was given after talks between the Russian leader and Donald Trump. Mr. Zelensky said Mr. Putin's words were at odds with Russia's overnight attacks on infrastructure. From Kiev, here's James Landale.
The Kremlin this morning insisted Russian attacks on energy infrastructure in Ukraine had been suspended, as President Putin had promised in his telephone call with Donald Trump. A spokesman claimed that to comply with the order, Russian forces had even shot down seven of their own drones that were in the air and bound for Ukraine. But President Zelensky, on a visit to Finland, said Russia had launched 150 drones overnight against targets in Ukraine, including energy facilities, two hospitals, and other civilian infrastructure. Putin's words, he said, are very much at odds with reality.
The UN says it believes two of its staff have been killed and others injured at a UN compound in central Gaza. They say one of its buildings near a hospital in Deir al-Balah was damaged and that it was investigating the incident. According to the Hamas-run health ministry, more than 20 people have been killed in airstrikes today. From Jerusalem, here's Yolan Nell.
The Israeli military have been very quick coming out with a statement saying that they did not attack a UN building in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. But the BBC has verified footage that does show injured foreign workers. Two of them are still wearing the blue UN flak jackets, arriving in a UN car and in a Palestinian ambulance at a hospital in Deir al-Balah. The UN has confirmed that it's investigating all of this, says that the cause at the moment is not clear.
Italy's Coast Guard says searches are continuing in the Mediterranean for missing migrants whose rubber dinghy was partially submerged. The operation is taking place off the Italian island of Lampedusa in what the Coast Guard called particularly adverse weather. World News from the BBC.
YWCA Madison invites you to join them to celebrate the 22nd annual Circle fundraiser on Thursday, March 20th at the Alliant Energy Center from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. YWCA Madison is eager to gather with their community of supporters to share stories that speak to who they are and demonstrate their values of humanity, community, growth, and restoration, which are at the heart of how they move as an organization. Attending the Circle fundraiser impacts the lives of thousands of women, children, and families who are served each year through YWCA's transformational programs in housing and shelter, employment and transportation, restorative justice, and learning and movement building. More information about the Circle fundraiser and other YWCA programs and resources can be found at ywcamadison.org. That's the 22nd annual Circle fundraiser on Thursday, March 20th at the Alliant Energy Center. Keeping you informed of community events and resources, this is WORT 89.9 FM and WORTFM.org.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Bluestem Jazz, presenting Twin Talk at the North Street Cabaret on Friday, March 21st at 8 p.m. Chicago's Twin Talk, featuring saxophonist Dustin Lorenzi, bassist singer Katie Ernst, and drummer Andrew Green, create a style that is elastic, spontaneous, and open. More information and tickets are available at bluestemjazz.org.
Good morning. It is Wednesday, March 19th, and this is the 8 o'clock buzz. I'm Jan Miyasaki. This morning, I'll be speaking with Dominic Ledesma, board president of Nuestro Mundo, Inc., a nonprofit organization, and Joshua Forham, president of Nuestro Mundo Community School. And the school is a Spanish-English dual-language immersion school within the Madison Metropolitan School District. So we'll be learning more about the school from Dominic Ledesma and Joshua Forehand, and Nuestro Mundo is a member agency of Community Shares Wisconsin. And also I'll be speaking with Reverend Brian Sauter, president and CEO of Faith in Place, a nonprofit organization that empowers people of diverse faiths and spiritualities to be leaders in advancing environmental and racial justice. And they have projects in Illinois, Indiana, and Wisconsin. So last week, Faith in Place joined a lawsuit filed by Earth Justice against the Trump administration for unlawfully freezing Inflation Reduction Act grant funds. So Faith in Place was awarded a $1.9 million USDA Forest Service Urban Community Forestry grant. And so we'll be hearing more about this from Brian Sauter to tell us more about the projects that have stalled and the lawsuit. And then later I'll be speaking with Dina Echols. She'll be joining me. She's on the board of the Wisconsin Network for Peace and Justice, a coalition of activist groups and citizens of conscience and within Wisconsin. And she'll be with me to invite you to the group's virtual spring assembly. So stay tuned to hear from Dina Echols. Stay tuned to the program. We'll be right back.
Excites me, that thrills and delights me. Oh no, it's just the nearness of you.
Just about 9 minutes after 8, and joining me is Dominic Ledesma, a board president of Nuestro Mundo, Inc., a nonprofit organization, and Joshua Forehand, president of principal of Nuestro Mundo Community School. The school is a Spanish-English dual language immersion school within the Madison Metropolitan School District. Nuestro Mundo is a member agency of Community Shares Wisconsin. Hey, good morning. I'm Dominic Ledesma and Joshua Forehand. Thank you for joining me.
Good morning, Jan. Thank you for having us.
Hey, so good morning. So Dominic, let's kind of just let folks know who may not be familiar with Nuestro Mundo Incorporated, and you hold the charter for the school. But what was the, you know, what was the organizing about, and why was this so important?
Yeah, absolutely. So Nuestro Mundo is a public instrumentality charter school. So it's a charter school within the district of the Madison Metropolitan School District. So it really, the board of Nuestro Mundo Inc., or as La Mesa Directiva, as we like to refer to it, you know, is really the sort of operates as a nonprofit. And so it is the board with decision making authority and oversight for a lot of the activities related to finances and some of the strategic direction of the school as a whole. So that's really the organizing principles. It's built into the infrastructure of our type of school. And our board includes, you know, folks who are parents and other folks within the community who all want to be able to support a dual language immersion program, all want to support Nuestro Mundo families, and also all want to support the success of our children.
And so this is a free public school within MMSD, and this status still allows some flexibility to achieve these goals that you're talking about.
Absolutely. And if I might put in a plug that we have open enrollment and registration is open through April 25th. And so all interested families in our DLI program would apply through the district's enrollment process. And then folks who are selected for the DLI program is through a randomized lottery process. But I will also defer to Josh because he's the principal and knows more of the details related to folks who are interested in our DLI program.
So, Josh, hold off. I'm going to come back to you to talk about how to, you know, participate and engage that lottery system. But the mission, Dominate, many cultures, two languages, and a community united with one purpose is how your mission statement starts. Can you talk about the sort of mission and vision, and that this, you know, is inviting, you know, many cultures?
Absolutely. So the first thing that I would say is that MMSD, you know, has robust offerings of different DLI programs or dual language immersion programs. But we have been residents of Madison, my wife and I, for a long time now, and we've had plenty of friends go through DLI. Now, we self-identify as a non-monolingual Latinx family, but really heard nothing but great things about the program and about the school of Nuestro Mundo. So as soon as we had the opportunity with our own daughter, who's actually, it's her birthday, shout out to Citlali, who is 9 today, we got a chance to experience it ourselves. And so my understanding of this school and its model stems not just from our experiences as parents in the school, but it's also some of the aspects of multilingual communication to serve linguistically and culturally diverse families has been a part of my research at the doctoral studies level. And so it's been awesome to see Nuestro Mundo, to see the mission that really looks to holistically develop both inside and outside of the classroom, all children. And we have a balanced mix of folks who are both heritage speakers or home speakers of Spanish, as well as folks who may be dominant in another language at home, but who understand the value and the importance of developing their own abilities and their own socialization in more than just one language.
Thank you, Dominique, and stand by there. Joshua Forehand is the principal of Nuestro Mundo Community School. So Joshua, what grades is the school serving?
Thanks, Jan. So we traditionally have served kindergarten through fifth grade. However, for our last charter renewal, which was for this current school year through 2029, we've been able to add a 4K program. So we now have the district's only dual language immersion 4K program, in which we can enroll students as young as 4 years old, get them started on the bilingual journey, and bring those students into our kindergarten through fifth grade program.
And so if somebody enters at 4K or those that entered as kindergarten, they then can remain enrolled until the fifth grade, right? Not every year.
That's correct. So once you are selected through the randomized lottery that Dominic mentioned, you're in through fifth grade.
Now, what is a 90-10 program model?
So 90-10 refers to the language allocation throughout the instructional day. So at the kindergarten level in a 90-10 program, 90% of the instructional time is going to be in the target language, which for us is Spanish. And 10% of the instructional day will be in the majority language, which is English. Each year, we add in about 10% more English language instruction time. So first grade is about 80% Spanish. Second grade is about 70% Spanish. By fourth and fifth grade, it's about 50-50. So to contrast that with other dual language programs in the Madison School District, other programs operate a 50-50 program, which means that starting at kindergarten, half the day is in English and half the day is in Spanish. Both of those programs can be very successful. We have opted to continue with our 90-10 program, even when the rest of the school district went to a 50-50 program.
Now, when students enter, is there a English language literacy level that has to be met or not? Or Spanish language, I should say, either or in that 90-10 model? Do they need to know some Spanish or in some English?
Yeah, not right away. So entering in 4K, kindergarten, or first grade, it's not an expectation that a student have a level of Spanish proficiency. English proficiency, you know, we don't assess that for admissions at all. So if a student comes to us, for example, we've had multiple families from Venezuela and Honduras here recently come into our city. And those students can enter our program, you know, not knowing a word of English. On the other hand, for Spanish, after first grade, we typically do not admit students who don't have at least some level of Spanish language proficiency. And the reason for that is the program model and the research around this model shows that students entering into a dual language program after first grade who may not have that Spanish language proficiency will find themselves kind of in a hole, maybe too deep to climb out of in terms of acquiring Spanish at a comparable level to their peers. And so that's kind of how it works. We do, upon admission, we do want to identify if a student does have some level of Spanish proficiency, because in our programs, we create classroom environments that have a certain percentage, maybe half of our students are Spanish proficient, and the other half are not Spanish proficient, and that creates learning opportunities for everyone to become bilingual together.
Can you say more about the curriculum itself? So we know that it's this 90-10, and then it changes as the grades progress. But the curriculum, the content, is it the what you would see during this this K through five grade levels, the same kind of core proficiency markers?
Yes, that's correct. So we as a public charter, we adhere to the same Common Core State Standards, New Generation Science Standards, as any other public school in the state of Wisconsin. We have an assessment system that mirrors the school district's assessment system. We employ the same curricular materials as other schools in Madison. But interestingly, we are in a transition period right now. I mentioned our latest charter renewal cycle that started in 2024. We're now pursuing authorization to become an international baccalaureate primary years program school. And so that's really exciting. It's going to, that again is kind of leveraging some of the flexibility that Dominic mentioned earlier. to do something new, to try something new. The whole point of an instrumentality charter school for a school district is to try new things and see how they work and maybe scale those things up if they're working really well. And that's what we saw with the dual language program. Nuestro Mundo opened its doors in 2004 as the very first dual language program. And then the school district watched how things progressed. They really liked it. The community was really accepting of it. And so they decided to open up multiple programs around the city. And that is a perfect example of what an instrumentality charter school is meant to do. So now we're looking for, you know, other ways to innovate and serve that role for the school district. And one of those things that we're doing is shifting our instructional model to this primary years program model.
Give me a sense of how large the classrooms are. How many students per teacher? That kind of context.
So we follow the same district class size policy as other schools in Madison. So we shoot for 15 to 18 kindergarten and first grade, no more than 18. We shoot for 18 or 19 in second grade and third grade. Because we do receive funds from the state of Wisconsin that are known as AGR funds, which are meant to serve in a class size reduction function. And those funds are available kindergarten through third grade. So after third grade, we kind of funnel those kids into two sections, and that's similar to other schools in Madison. So our class sizes in fourth and fifth grade bump up to anywhere between 24 and 27.
So all students, Joshua Forehand, principal of Nuestro Mundo Community School, are all students don't learn the same? So do you also support students' different, learning styles, and, do you have supportive services for your students?
We do, yes. Again, we adhere to the same standards, the same state statutes governing education in the state of Wisconsin. So we provide special education. We have the ability to provide bilingual special education services, which is really fantastic. To mirror what's going on in our core program. We employ what we call in Madison a multi-tiered system of support. Outside of Madison, you may recognize it as a response to intervention model. So we have specialists such as a reading interventionist, bilingual resource specialists, who provide targeted small group or individual instruction to students who demonstrate need for that. Within our special education program, we also are able to provide speech and language services from a bilingual speech and language therapist, OT, occupational therapy, physical therapy, anything that families have access to, students have access to in any other public school.
The goal is... Go ahead, Dominic.
But if I may also just add the same, the learning context or the benefits of DLI education, but within the classroom and beyond the classroom, what the research tells us from Ofelia Garcia, Mariana Pacheco, Gloria Ladson Billings, and many others in this area is that, a dual language immersion program or a non-monolingual education helps develop the neuroplasticity in young learners. It helps them become more socially well-adjusted. Mm-hmm. It helps them, consider a much bigger world that is outside of their door. And in particular, for some of our families, whether they're newcomer families to either the Madison area or the U.S., this school community really offers a values orientation that provides a strong grounding for students and families. And so those are some of the things to complement the formalized educational structures that Josh talked about that really... speak to that holistic approach to supporting all learners and all families within the school.
I have somebody calling, wondering about the pathway for attending Nuestro Mundo Community School for low-income kids. for, you know, other kids of color, because this is, I'm hearing you talk and I'm just imagining the joy I make of seeing whatever, you know, intangible things are happening with communication and connection as well as learning. So again, it is a lottery, but there is, it is for anyone. Are there any particular access for low-income kids?
Well, absolutely. And that really comes through outreach and making sure that all families, regardless of race, ethnicity, or socioeconomic status, know that we're an option. So typically when you have opt-in programs, whether it's a dual language program or a science magnet, you see this across the country, without really effective outreach, you run the risk of really only those families, maybe with higher levels of education in the home, higher economic status, who have access to information and know how to navigate the school district and how to navigate information. Those tend to be the ones that seek this information out and access these programs. And so it's part of our mission to ensure that we are serving historically underserved, yes, populations. So currently 65% of our students are Latino, which makes up, you know, obviously the largest portion of our student body by far. Where we are really putting our efforts now are other groups within the community, African-American families having access to the information they need to make the best decision for their family. We want to increase outreach to our Hmong families as well. And so it's very important to us to continue to serve the population that the school was created for.
Yes, and the 4K class will help, I think, open up that process, right? Because they're much younger. The language acquisition is ability kind of is there, ready to be stimulated. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, Joshua, can you talk about how to, you know, the lottery, the class you're enrolling now, all of those kind of logistics?
Sure. So the way that this works is, so Nuestro Mundo doesn't have an attendance area like other schools in Madison. And so families should enroll in the school district. That process is done online. They may need to, bring documents to their attendance area school immunization, birth certificate, proof of residence, everything that is required to enroll with the school district. So that process can all take place at the home school. So if you live on the west side, you don't have to come all the way over to Nuestro Mundo to do those, to start that process. You can, however, call the school and request support with this, and we're happy to support any family living anywhere in the city of Madison. But the process really goes through the home attendance area school. And after that is completed, so after the general registration with the school district is completed, families will receive a username and password to access the student information system called Infinite Campus. And Infinite Campus needs typically about 24 hours to kind of, it'll overnight, it kind of updates. So the day after registering, there's another step that needs to be taken. And this is really important because this is the step that families don't know about unless we at school and MMSD, because it's the same thing for any dual language program in the city. You have to take another step called the dual language application. And that is also available online from the Madison Metropolitan School District website. And during that process, you'll be asked, you know, some information like what language does your child speak at home? Which schools are you interested in applying for? And you can apply for one school, or you can apply for all the dual language schools at the same time. In the other schools, if you, for example, if you live in the Henderson Elementary attendance area, you have a priority in the lottery system or in admissions for the dual language program. And that's because they want to make sure that they are offering spaces for their attendance area families first. However, in Nuestro Mundo, we no longer have an attendance area, so that priority doesn't exist. So access is really available for everyone across the city of Madison in partnership with the Madison Metropolitan School District. We've been able to maintain bus transportation for students living in the Southside Elementary attendance area. And so anyone living in the Southside attendance area who live outside of a 1.5 mile radius of our school on Buckeye Road. So that would be anybody who lives on Rimrock Road, Moreland Road, that area, or anyone on Buckeye on the other side of Stoughton Road. We have a little triangle of attendance area there that belongs to Southside. Residents of those areas can receive free public or free bus transportation provided by the school district. Anyone outside of those areas will need to provide their own transportation.
Now, for those who have those kinds of spots because of the school district, the school area that they live in, who's the lottery for?
Can you repeat that? I'm sorry.
So I hear that if you live in a particular school district, that school may have some availability in inside a Nuestro Mundo, if I heard that correctly. But then there's also the lottery. Who is the lottery for?
So every dual language program across the city has a certain number of seats that they can fill. If the number of applications exceed the number of seats available, then it's a randomized lottery
for that school area.
That's correct. And if a family chooses more than one school, they may be selected for multiple schools, and then they get to choose which school they want to go to.
So the Nuestro Mundo Community School is a Spanish-English dual-language immersion school within the Madison Metropolitan School District. It is free. It is a public school. You can learn more about it at the MMSD website, or you can log on to Nuestro Mundo Inc., I think is the website, to find out more about registration timelines. I just have about 30 seconds. I'm going to ask Dominique Ledesma, board president of Nuestro Mundo Inc., a member agency of Community Shares Wisconsin, to share why this school and this kind of vision means so much to you.
Well, first and foremost, because it really, really creates the type of educational environment that allows all students to thrive, in particular those who may struggle within what we might refer to as mainstream school settings, because it really provides a strong anchor point in a foundation based on both language and culturally specific values to be responsive to the needs of families. So that's super exciting. I'm speaking that not just as, the president of the board, but also as a parent of a child who attends the school. So great teachers, great leadership, a highly engaged, family base of folks that are there really make this school community an awesome choice for parents. It would include families to consider it as a great educational option.
Check out the information at the websites I mentioned. You can learn more about the Family and School Alliance program and how parents and community are engaged at the Nuestro Mundo Community School. Hey, thank you, Dominique Ledesma and Joshua Forehand, for joining me this morning. It was great to talk with you.
Likewise.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, it's 8:34. We're going to take a short break, and then joining me will be Reverend Brian Sauter, President and CEO of Faith in Place. So stay with me.
Melody, There's a melody I used to play counterpoint every yesterday.
I'm standing by. Thank you for standing by, Reverend Brian Sauter, President and CEO of Faith in Place, a nonprofit organization that empowers people of diverse faiths and spiritualities to be leaders in advancing environmental and racial justice. They have projects in Illinois, Indiana, and Wisconsin. And last week, Faith in Place joined a lawsuit filed by Earth Justice against the Trump administration for unlawfully freezing Inflation Reduction Act grant funds. So Faith in Place was awarded a grant from the USDA Forest Service Urban Community Forestry Program, and that program designed to ensure all residents, regardless of their income, ethnicity, or location, have equal access to the benefits of trees and green space to mitigate extreme health, to create new jobs in disadvantaged communities, and now these projects have been stalled. So good morning, Reverend Brian Sauter. Thank you for joining me.
Good morning. It's my pleasure to be here.
Thank you for standing by. Can you say more about Faith in Place and the work you do? This may be a new group for some here listening to WORT.
Yeah, Faith in Place works across Wisconsin, Illinois, and Indiana. We work with faith communities, whether it's a mosque, a synagogue, a church, a parish, a temple. Our vision is that the local faith institution is really leading the way for environmental justice in the community. And so we partner with those faith communities to work on local environmental projects that can be sustainable food and land use projects, energy projects, starting garden projects, working with the high school youth on environmental careers and advocacy as well. So we have an amazing network all across Wisconsin, Illinois, and Indiana of faith folks who want to take care of our common land and the air and the water that we all share. And we're working on various projects that are related to environmental causes, like planting trees.
So, you know, you apply for a federal grant to, I guess, to USDA. These are competitive. There's a lot of documentation, a lot of requirements. You do everything that is required. You get one of these. Can you talk about, you know, that process and what you've been doing? And now you're stalled. Can you talk about your projects?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when we work with faith communities, the number one need for folks to step into that vision of being environmental leaders is capital, access to capital, whether they're looking to replace a boiler, whether they're looking to increase the tree canopy or prevent basement flooding through green water infrastructure. And so at Faith in Place, we were super excited about the Inflation Reduction Act, because one of the major things that legislation does is provide capital to the communities who need it most to do these great projects to build health and wellness throughout the community. And so we made the decision to apply for the Tree Canopy and Workforce Community Grant through the USDA and U.S. Forest Service. This is a very competitive grant. We were very pleased to be awarded $1.9 million. And then we led a competitive process with our faith partners and community-based organizations that they could apply in for $30,000 tree and workforce projects, and we were going to give away $1.6 million. So we spent all of last year, you know, doing community education, workshops, talking about tree projects, how to make sure you plant the right trees that bring the most health to the community, prevent, you know, high heat days, help clean the air pollution in the community, help prevent basement flooding. And we got a bunch of applications in at the end of last year for different tree canopy and workforce community grants. And in January this year, we were able to award 58 of those, 12 of those projects throughout Wisconsin. And people were super excited. They've worked really hard on these applications. And then once the new administration came in place and started with the executive orders, that paused and delayed and froze those funds. And so sadly, at that moment, our team had to call up, you know, all of the folks that we just let them know that we awarded their tough won projects and that we couldn't proceed forward with work because of the uncertainty and the freezing of those funds.
Can you, there was a project in Milwaukee. It's a good example. Can you talk about the project in Milwaukee? There was one that you highlight in your press release from Chicago, one in Indianapolis. These are building climate resilience, creating green jobs. You know, I guess those were bad words or something. Can you tell us about the projects?
Yeah, well, you know, Milwaukee, unfortunately, and communities have urban heat islands, which just means that because of the lack of the tree canopy, when it gets hot out, it gets extra hot in those areas. And so when it gets extra hot like that, it just disproportionately affects low to moderate income, black and brown communities, because of the lack of divestment in those communities. And so those heat islands are just are scary for our senior population, our more vulnerable population. And so trees can really help with that. And Solomon Community Temple in Milwaukee was one of our awardees. And they were planning to combat that extreme heat and improve air and water quality, and also plant fruit trees. Fruit trees require more maintenance, so it provides more jobs in the community, but also it grows food and can do some good education about access to food, and just provide a lot of solutions and a lot of energy around the neighborhood struggling with pollution and health disparities. So with the funding frozen, Solomon Community Temples had to stop work on that project. You know, the best time to plant fruit trees is in the spring, so that's going to delay us beyond the spring. So it's just going to delay, you know, just a solution that works for people, that's been designed by the folks in the neighborhood, that's an example of government working on behalf of all of us, not working on behalf of corporations and the wealthy, but working on behalf of everyday people. And despite all that careful planning and preparation on our behalf, and the willingness that we've had and commitment to keep our end of the bargain, the government hasn't kept their end of the bargain.
So I'm trying to imagine how much had already been done. Did the grant start in January or October? October 1st.
Timing-wise, we know we did all of the education and awareness and just talking not only about the value of trees, but how to put together a competitive application. Sure. We did that all in 2024, and folks applied in by our deadline, which was just before Thanksgiving in November. And then we took that time internally to carefully review all those applications, you know, per the guidance of our grant agreement. And then we made the awards in January. So the timing of us making the awards and then having to turn around and call people, yes, thankfully was short. So folks didn't do too much work, but they did go from, you know, just super excited about a eloquent solution for their community that they designed to frustration and sadness around not being able to proceed.
Yeah, and you had, as an organization, built this structure to facilitate this process.
Yeah, we built structure. We hired staff. We spent a lot of time doing the education. And I'll tell you, I've been leading Faith in Place for 11 years. And I've never had an instance where I've guaranteed and committed funding to one of our amazing partners, only have to turn around and tell them that we can't follow through on our obligations. And, you know, that's just the first time in 11 years of leading the organization of having to do that. It's very upsetting.
So last week you joined the Earth Justice lawsuit against the Trump administration for what is a unlawful freezing of these Inflation Reduction Act funds. Can you tell us about that step and why Faith in Place joined Earth Justice as one of the plaintiffs?
Yeah, it was a really tough decision. Like, I personally come from a background where because of religious reasons, you know, you don't sue. And we really had to think through that decision, pray about it. But we realized that it was really important to get this story out there. We feel like we're a microcosm of what's happening across the whole country. You know, these programs work because of organizations like Faith in Place, doing the on-the-ground work in community, building trust, relationships, passing the money through, you know, dotting the I's, crossing the T's of the paperwork. And this is such an example of a program that works for people. And to see that be delayed and to see that be those funds frozen, impacting so many people all across the nonprofit sector, not just nonprofit sector, many of our partners that farm as well. Many farmers are suffering from these unjust delays. And so we felt like a lawsuit was a way to create a call to action, to tell the story of what's happening in the community, and also to take a stand for environmental justice. You know, we want to urge the administration to end these harmful delays and allow nonprofits and farmers to do the work that communities are counting on.
So the Earth Justice is saying that the administration's unlawful withholding of funds violates the Constitution, the Administrative Procedure Act, and threatens the ability of these grantees to effectively serve their communities. I wanted to add, because Brian did mention farmers, there are other plaintiffs. There are five farms in Maryland, Massachusetts, and Mississippi, with nonprofit organizations who are also plaintiffs in this lawsuit. One is the Butterbee Farm in Maryland. You can read more about these plaintiffs as well. I'm just Green Latinos are one of them. It's just a really, I think, a group of folks that are resisting this this, you know, I don't know, unexpected, unlawful act. I don't think these are your usual suspect plaintiffs, do you think?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I so admire those other groups and the work that they're doing. And again, they just highlight examples of folks on the ground making these programs work for everyday people and driving climate resiliency and health in our communities. And I applaud all of them for taking the step alongside us to join us plaintiffs with Earth Justice. And also just a huge shout out to Earth Justice as our legal partners. You know, they understand the legal piece, and we understand the harm that we've experienced in community and the devastating consequences as a result.
Yeah, so along with Faith in Place, there's Cultivate Kansas City as well, garden training program. The stuff that I think people really know are on the ground helping people. So what happens next on the lawsuit?
You know, I'm relying on our legal experts for what happens next. They filed last week, and we've been having this opportunity to talk with great folks like you all to tell the story, to get the word out there, and we'll find out what happens next on the lawsuit.
So I would direct people to Faith in Place just to learn more about them. You can also read about the lawsuit there. You can also check out Earth Justice and learn more about the lawsuit and additional plaintiffs that they brought this suit on behalf of. I'm speaking with Reverend Brian Sauter. He's the CEO of Faith in Place. It's so good to meet you, and I'm glad we could talk this morning. Before we say so long, any final comments for our listeners?
Just a huge thank you for having me on. It's great to be on, and hope folks head to faithinplace.org to learn more and get involved.
Thank you. Thank you, Reverend Brian Sauter. Hey, it's 8:47. We're going to take a short break, and joining me will be Dina Eccles from Wisconsin Network for Peace and Justice. So stay with us.
Well, look what you've done for me. You're making more fun for me. True, but join me, destined to be. Set in my ways, stuck in my day. Well, you were the butterfly.
Thank you for standing by, Dina Eccles. She's on the board of the Wisconsin Network for Peace and Justice, and they are holding the virtual spring assembly beginning on March 23rd. The Wisconsin Network for Peace and Justice, a coalition of activist groups and citizens of conscience within Wisconsin. Dina Echo's on the board. She is a writer, a farmer, activist. She's also a member of Echo Valley Hope. Hey, good morning, Dina Echo's. It's great to have you on.
Well, thank you, Jan. It's good to be here.
Hey, so, you know, always wanting to find new folks who might be interested in the Wisconsin Network for Peace and Justice. You were founded in 1991. Can you tell people about, you know, the mission, the vision of your group?
Right. Yes. Yeah. It was actually founded on February 23rd, the very day of the invasion, ground invasion of the Gulf War. And it was formed from a coalition of individuals and activists throughout the state who were resisting that war. It has since, so it's been around for a long time. I wasn't part of the organization at that time, but I have a great respect for those people who saw the wisdom of coming together and are still doing it.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's morphed into a network of over 85 organizations throughout the state devoted to social and environmental justice, ending war, and uplifting humanity in a lot of different diverse ways.
You know, I remember actually that back in 1991, but today, why do you think the network is so important today?
Yeah, I think more than ever, maybe.
Yes.
Because the understanding that it isn't just about ending war, that that's one facet of what environmental and social justice and peace-minded people need to understand. And we can no longer stand in our silos. We can no longer not be aware of one another because we need everyone to be together. And that's, to me, that's the beauty of the network, because while each organization operates independently, and in many cases, there might not even be agreement on certain issues, but still the recognition of one another and the support of one another and the willingness to communicate together and collaborate together, that needs to always come to the forefront.
You know, the event beginning, it's March 24th through 28th, the virtual spring assembly is designed to do, you know, just that, to celebrate the differences and diversity of those in the Network for Peace and Justice, but also the unity. So can you talk about the how you're doing that in the spring assembly? There's a topic each day, right?
Right. So our bylaws ask for a spring assembly and a fall gathering. And the spring assembly has always been a time where our organizations have a couple of minutes to talk about what they're doing. But, you know, a three-hour time frame where people are asked to come together, it was very confining. So we decided to stretch it out to have topics each evening with five or six speakers that will address those topics and highlight not only member organizations, but also allies and partners, so that we can continue to build what I love to think of as the love community. Oh. So, yes, as you were saying, we are beginning on March 24th, which is Monday, and running through Friday, March 28th. And it will happen from 7 to 8 o'clock, and it'll be via Zoom. It's going to be recorded, so it'll be available to be shared. And afterward, for all of our organizations, as well as any people who've registered to be a part of the assembly, which you can be there one night or, you know, you could come to all of them. Everyone will receive information, links, activists, you know, what people are doing right now in time to kind of combat some of the cruelty that we're seeing. So I could go over, if you want, I could tell you what those five nights are.
Yeah, go ahead. And if people can't go to all of them, they might want to for sure schedule an evening to an hour in the evening to hear from one of these topics.
Right. And they can register just going to WNPJ.org. It's a very quick, easy place to see, you know, how you can come upon the registration. Anyway, Monday, March 24th, we're calling it Coalition and Community Building, Our Common Denominators. And here we hope to inspire people towards continuing to build strong communities. We have representatives from, we have Renee Ann Goodrich from Native Lives Matter Coalition. And I heard you just had spoken with Faith in Place, and we will have Muhammad Shahzad Hussein from Faith in Place, Deborah Gillespie, Mothers Against Gun Violence, and Building Unity and Interfaith Voices, many different organizations that really work towards fostering community. On Tuesday, March 25th, Immigration in Palestine, the Human Connections. We're trying to help people overcome their complacency about what's taking place to human beings. So we will have members from Voce della Frontera and LULAC to speak about Know Your Rights and the state of ICE and deportations in our state. And while we know we're in Ramadan, it may be very difficult for some of our Palestinian allies to be there as they'll be breaking fast, but we plan on a strong condemnation of U.S. funding and support of the Palestinian genocide. On Wednesday, March 26th, Protecting All Our Rights, it's a star-studded crew, hosted by board member Tynetta Jackson. People will be talking about the April 1st vote and the importance of it, and voting rights in general, disability rights, LGBTQ plus rights from Fair, Wisconsin. Workers' justice will be present, and the right to boycott campaign will be talked about. And Paul DeMain will be speaking on Native sovereignty and treaty rights. Thursday, March 27th, it's environmental justice, and we will have members from 350 Wisconsin on line 5. Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network on CAFOs and digesters, and I really welcome, I live rurally, and I really welcome people in the city to understand what's happening out here, because it needs a lot. It's going to need a lot of attention. And Guy Ryder will be speaking on the rights of nature and protecting the porkies. Friday, March 28th, which will be our last evening, is anti-war, anti-militarism, and abolition. And John Peck, most of you know, I'm sure, will be hosting with members of World Beyond War and the Milwaukee Anti-War Coalition. And WORT's SD Dinor of JVP will also be part of that panel on Friday. So that's the lineup as it is in this moment. And it will run from 7 to 8, but at 8 o'clock, we'll stop recording and there'll just be time for questions and answers and other comments that people might have.
So it will be interactive then. I was going to ask you that. People can attend.
After 8 o'clock. We want people to have the opportunity to make their presentations and explain the nature of their work and welcome people to participate in some way in what they're doing. And then there'll be time for questions and answers afterward.
So this is a free event. It is the Wisconsin Network for Peace and Justice virtual Spring Assembly, the 24th to the 28th from 7 to 8 p.m. Now, you can get details at WNPJ.org, and there you have to register so you can get the link. And do you get the link the same for all 5 days, or is that a different link every day?
Yeah, it'll be the same link, and most likely, I'm sure we'll try to find ways. In fact, if anybody wants to help out with any of this, we're always welcome for volunteers, because there's a lot still to do to get the word out. And I really appreciate this opportunity to tell people, because this is a moment in time that, all of us paying attention in whatever ways we can and participating in whatever ways we can is so important.
Thank you.
So we probably will air it on, Facebook as well.
Okay, on Facebook, so people can attend that way as well. Hey, thank you, Dina Eccles. And if people want to volunteer, they can contact the Wisconsin Network for Peace and Justice?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. That would be great.
Thank you for being with me this morning, Dina Eccles. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Hey, Dina mentioned, and she used the word love community, and that was like, she was mind-meld with me, because I was thinking about some music I was listening to last night. So we're just going to hear a little bit. It's the Brothers Casimiro. I'm singing Rainbow Connection for our love community.
You're listening to WRT 89.9 FM, Madison. Great way to end the show, Jan. Coming up next, we have the Intergerio Kiosk, and then Art Stevenson's going to produce some music for us. Just stay tuned.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Wednesday, March 19th.
A classic bumper sticker posed this alarming question. Where are we going? And what am I doing in this handbasket? What we're in today is an Orwellian basket to political hell, propelled by Trump himself. He has assembled a cohort of anti-democracy zealots who are autocratically cutting off people's fundamental freedoms, including speech, press, travel, and even thought. The first Trump term unleashed a gaggle of right-wingers promoting mass ignorance by demonizing books, librarians, teachers, scientists, and our own people's history. Next came a maniacal MAGA assault on America's most essential unifying democratic value, the reality that we are a proudly diverse bunch of people striving to achieve the ideal of equality for all. Heresy, shouted Trump's GOP, demanding that the pursuit of such goals literally be outlawed. And now comes all-out Kafkaesque crazy, with Trump going on a binge of mass censorship and goofy executive dictates. Consider just two of his recent commands. One bans government cafeterias from using paper straws. Another suspends a law that made it illegal for U.S. corporations to bribe foreign officials. There's